Introduction. The body consists of about 60% water. Body fluid is distributed in three different fluid compartments: plasma, the extracellular space, and the intracellular space. In these fluid compartments, there are different substances: salts, sugars, amino acids, and various other acids, and various proteins. But the substances are unequally distributed in the various compartments. Since the body is constantly changing its fluid and salt levels through sweat, feces, urine, and through ingestion of water and food, the body content of water and salts are carefully regulated and controlled. The definition of an acid is a substance that can release hydrogen ions. It is free hydrogen ions, not bound hydrogen ions, that determine the acid levels in the blood. So the more free hydrogen ions, the lower the pH of the blood. One of the body's most important molecules that bind with hydrogen ions are bicarbonate ions. Acids build up in the body as a result of metabolism and nutrient absorption through the intestine. It is important to keep the pH of the blood and body tissues within certain limits, and the availability of bicarbonate is thus important in the regulation of the body's acid level. The kidneys play an active and important role in both the water, salt, and acid-base regulation in both the blood and body tissues. Water and salt balance. This chapter provides a simple and clear description of the body's water and salt levels and their regulation. The first section will give you an overview. Thereafter, we cover the detailed renal handling of water and salts, Chapter 2, and acids, Chapter 3. Learning outcomes. After studying this chapter, you should be able to describe various body fluid compartments and their relative content of sodium, potassium, calcium, chlorine, and proteins. Provide an explanation of the body's regulation of water balance. Provide an explanation of the body's regulation of salt balance. Explain the terms dehydration, hypertonic hydration, and edema. A male body of 70 kilograms contains about 40 litres of water. It constitutes about 60% of the body weight. 25 litres of this water is stored in the intracellular space inside the body cells and thus constitutes 40% of body weight. The remainder, about 15 litres, is located in the extracellular spaces outside the cells and represents 20% of body weight. The extracellular space comprises about 20% blood plasma and 80% of interstitial fluid, figure 1. The body fluids, regardless of location, contains large amount of dissolved substances, various salts, sugars and amino acids, fat and other substances in smaller amounts. The distribution of these substances varies in the different fluid compartments. See figure 2. The levels of the various salts are relatively similar in both plasma and extracellular fluid. On the other hand, figure 2 shows that the distribution of the various ions are very different between the extracellular and intracellular fluid compartments. The level of sodium, chloride, and bicarbonate is much higher in extracellular compartments compared to intracellular. The opposite is true for potassium, magnesium, sulfate, and hydrogen phosphate. This distribution of ions is important, for example, for membrane potentials, nerve impulses, and muscle contractions to function normally. Therefore, ion levels, in particular sodium or salt levels, in the body are carefully regulated. The same is true for the fluid levels. If the body loses water, the salt concentration in the body will increase. Salt and water balance are closely linked. Regulation of water balance. The body is constantly exposed to fluid loss, averaging about 2,500 millilitres or 2.5 litres per day. 100 millilitres is lost in the faeces, 200 millilitres through sweating, and 700 millilitres through the lungs and skin, excluding the amount lost in sweat. The remainder is lost through the renal excretion of urine, figure 3. This water loss must be compensated by fluid intake in order to maintain the fluid balance. This means that every day your intake must average about 2,500 millilitres of fluid, figure 3. Fluid is produced from cell metabolism, approximately 10% of intake. For example, the water formed when the cells produce ATP from glucose. 250 millilitres of water is produced from metabolism per day. Food ingestion constitutes about 30% of the daily fluid intake, while drinking accounts for the remaining 60% of the fluid consumed daily. There are two main factors that control the water balance: water intake, water loss. The main regulatory mechanism of water intake is the first mechanism. An increase in plasma concentration of 2 to 3% initiates the first mechanism in the hypothalamus. The experience of dry mouth will also trigger the sensation of thirst. A loss of blood volume and decreased blood pressure detected by baroreceptors will trigger mechanisms to retain fluids, but this will not occur until the volume is reduced by approximately 10 to 15% and is therefore less important than the thirst mechanism. In the pituitary gland, within the thirst center, osmoreceptors respond to the salt concentration in the blood and they are activated by increased plasma concentration of salts. They can also be stimulated by other factors, such as impulses from the baroreceptors and angiotensin II. The most important mechanism for the regulation of water loss is by the antidiuretic hormone, ADH. ADH is secreted from the hypothalamus when there is an increase in plasma concentration due to loss of fluid and an increase in salt levels. ADH acts on the kidney to absorb more water and reduce the amount of water excreted in the urine. The urine also becomes more concentrated. The body absorbs the water from the kidney so that the plasma concentration decreases to normal levels. See renal physiology below. Dehydration. Dehydration is the condition where fluid loss is greater than fluid intake. Dehydration can be seen as a consequence of bleeding, burns, prolonged vomiting, diarrhea, extreme sweating, and the use of diuretics, urine-producing drugs. Dehydration can also be caused by endocrine disorders, such as diabetes. In dehydration, fluid from plasma is lost, figure 4. As the fluid pressure decreases in plasma, this is being offset by movement of fluid into the plasma from the interstitial spaces, where pressure is higher, and then fluid moves out of the cells again because the pressure here is greater. This results in the cells shrinking with the consequent danger of changes in or cessation of cellular functions. Hypertonic hydration. Hypertonic hydration is a term that describes a condition that occurs when a person consumes a large amount of water. Hypertonic indicates that the concentration of salts is lower, hypo, than saline, isotonic. Hypertonic hydration may occur with extremely high water intake or kidney damage. When the concentration of the various substances, salts, proteins, etc., decreases in plasma and the body in general, the consequence is that the extracellular space increases in volume and salt concentrations in the body decreases. When the salt concentration decreases in the extracellular space, it means that the fluid will enter the cells where there is a higher concentration of salts and the cells swell, figure 5. This is especially harmful to nerve cells. Edema. Edema is another condition of a state of abnormal fluid balance. Edema is an accumulation of fluid in interstitial compartments causing the entire tissue to swell. For example, hydrostatic pressure can affect edema. In heart failure, the heart is unable to pump enough blood quickly and consequently, the blood collects in the veins and venous blood pressure may increase to such a level that plasma is forced out of the blood vessels and into the interstitial space. This can cause edema. The same can happen if you sit or stand still for long periods. Increased permeability in capillaries may also increase the chances of edema, for example, inflammatory reactions. The regulation of salt balance. In addition to having control of fluid balance, it is also crucial to control the salt balance in the body. As with water, there are two main factors that control salt balance: salt intake, salt loss. The intake of salt comes from food and liquids, and a smaller amount can be released in the body during metabolism. A low salt intake is rarely a problem in the industrialized world. Physiologically, it is a much bigger challenge when we consume too much salt because of a need to carefully regulate salt excretion in the feces, urine, and sweat. Salts in the body include sodium, potassium, calcium, magnesium, zinc, and other ions in smaller concentrations. Yet, it is mostly sodium that has the most physiological influence. This is because sodium is the predominant salt in the extracellular fluid and constitutes 90 to 95% of the salts in the form of sodium bicarbonate and sodium chloride. Therefore, sodium concentration is the main determinant of osmotic pressure and is therefore crucial for the control of extracellular fluid volume. It is important to recognize that loss of sodium does not usually change sodium concentration. This is because when we lose sodium, we lose water at the same time, and thus sodium concentration remains unchanged. In addition, there seems to be no sodium receptor in peripheral tissues. Therefore, sodium balance has to be regulated using specialised mechanisms. Three factors affect sodium balance: aldosterone, which stimulates sodium uptake in the kidneys, blood pressure receptors that regulate the body fluid levels and are then compensated by controlling sodium uptake, atrial natriuretic peptide, AMP, which responds to elevated blood pressure and compensates by inhibiting sodium uptake in the kidneys. Summary: your body contains a lot of water, which is distributed into different compartments and contains a carefully controlled combination of salts. Water and salt level disturbances can cause major physiological abnormalities, affecting, for example, nerve and muscle cells' ability to conduct electrical impulses or the cell's ability to transport molecules across the cell membrane. The regulation of water and salt levels are closely linked. The kidneys play a key role in this regulation, as we shall see next. Kidneys' anatomy and histology. The kidneys, figure 6, are excretory organs. This means that they are responsible for the separation and excretion of various waste products of the body. The kidney excretes excess water, salt, and waste materials, usually nitrogen waste, as a result of the body's metabolism of amino acids. These excretory products are filtered from the blood as urine. Every day, about 200 litres of blood are filtered through the kidneys. Only a small proportion is excreted as urine. The kidney is also a hormone-producing organ and secretes renin, which indirectly regulates blood pressure, and erythropoietin, which regulates the production of red blood cells in the bone marrow. In addition, the kidneys convert vitamin D into vitamin D3, the active form of the vitamin, which increases calcium absorption in the body. Learning outcomes. After studying the chapter of the kidneys, you should be able to describe the main functions of the kidney, explain the location and structure of the kidneys, outline the structure and blood supply of the nephrons, describe the glomerulus and the juxtaglomerular apparatus construction, explain glomerular filtration and glomerular filtration rate, GFR, and its regulation, explain nephron tubular reabsorption and secretion and their hormonal regulation, explain how the kidneys produce both dilute and concentrated urine, describe the location and structure of the ureter, bladder, and urethra, describe the regulation of bladder emptying, micturition. Kidneys, anatomy, and histology. The body is equipped with two kidneys located in the posterior of the abdominal cavity, figure 7, at the level of the vertebrae, T12 to L3, and are somewhat protected by the lower rib. The kidneys receive their blood supply from the aorta via the renal artery, figure 6. The kidneys are covered by three layers of supporting tissue. Outermost is the connective tissue that anchors the kidney in its location in the abdomen. The next layer is fatty tissue that protects the kidneys against physical injury, and beneath this is a capsule composed of connective tissue that contains the main structures of a kidney. Directly beneath this connective tissue capsule is the renal cortex, figure 8, and the inner layer of the kidney is the renal medulla. The gross structure of the medulla is comprised of 8 pyramids. Each pyramid contains thousands of the smaller structural and functional units of a kidney, the nephron. Right in the centre of the kidneys are the papillae of each pyramid. The papillae act as a funnel and lead the filtered fluid to be excreted into the kidney pelvis, figure 8. The renal pelvis is in itself a funnel and pipe that finally forms the ureter. The ureter channels the urine into the bladder, where it is stored prior to excretion. The kidneys receive under normal conditions about 25% of the cardiac output, i.e. on average a total of about 1.2 litres of blood per minute. The autonomic nervous system is involved in the regulation of renal urine production, as it is the sympathetic neurons that regulate renal blood supply. The nephrons. The smallest structural and functional unit of a kidney is the nephron. Each kidney contains about 1 million nephrons. The nephrons are a tubular system of pipes and ducts that is separate from the blood vessels. After filtration of fluid from the blood supply, it passes into the nephrons. This filtrate, after passing through the tubular system to the ureters, will become the urine. This filtrate, as it passes through the nephron's tubules, will receive additional water, salts, and waste products, so its composition changes until the urine finally empties into the bladder to be excreted. Each nephron is divided into the following sections, figure 9. Glomerulus, proximal tubules, loop of Henle, descending and ascending parts, and distal tubules. The glomerulus is located in the first section of a nephron, where the fluid from the blood supply delivered via a network of capillaries is transferred into the nephrons due to the hydrostatic pressure difference between the capillaries, high pressure, and the glomerulus, low pressure. The glomerulus is the name given to the capillary network, and the nephron capsule encircling it is referred to as Bowman's capsule. The glomerulus is always located in the renal cortex. Fluid is forced out of the capillaries and into the Bowman's capsules by the hydrostatic pressure referred to above. This filtrate then enters the proximal tubules. From here, it passes down the loop of Henle located in the renal medulla. The loop of Henle is divided histologically into two sections, the descending and the ascending loops. From the ascending loop of Henle, the filtrate passes into the distal tubules. The final section of the nephron is the collecting duct. A single collection duct will collect pre-urine from several nephrons, figure 9. The collection ducts lead the filtrate into kidney papillae located in the renal medulla. From the kidney papilla, the urine passes into the renal pelvis and from there via the ureter into the bladder. Histologically, there are two types of nephrons, figure 10, cortical nephrons and juxtamedullary nephrons. 85% of the nephrons are cortical and are mostly located in the cortex, and only a small portion of the loop of Henle is protruding into the medulla. The juxtamedullary nephrons, 15% of nephrons, has a long loop of Henle that runs deep into the medulla. It is by these deep loops of Henle the kidneys are able to make concentrated urine, i.e. urine comprising relatively little water and high concentrations of salts and waste products. Nephrons capillaries. The renal artery leads blood from the aorta to the kidney and branches off into a number of arterioles when it arrives in the kidney. These arterioles deliver blood to the glomeruli located at the border of the renal cortex and medulla. See figure 8. The afferent arteriole, ingoing, leads blood into the capillary network inside the glomerulus. The blood that is not filtered in the glomerulus and passes out of the capillaries exits the glomerulus via the efferent arteriole. See figures 9 and 10. The efferent arterioles of cortical nephrons will wrap around the proximal and distal tubules, while the efferent arterioles in juxtamedullary nephrons, called the vasa recta, wrap around the loop of Henle. Figure 10. Most fluids and substances transmitted into the nephrons in the glomerulus are returned into the bloodstream through the vasa recta. The remaining salts, fluid, and waste products in the tubule are then excreted as urine. Glomerulus. As previously described, the glomerulus consists of a nephron capsule, Bowman's capsule, and the ingoing capillary network, figure 11, and is where blood is filtered. The driving force behind the filtration is the blood pressure, creating a hydrostatic pressure in the capillaries, and the capillaries and the wall of Bowman's capsule is perforated and structured in such a manner that water and small molecules easily pass through. Larger molecules and molecules with a negative charge, which are mainly medium-sized and large proteins, will not pass through the perforations in the capillaries and into the Bowman's capsule. The filtrate, therefore, should not contain large molecules like proteins. The juxtaglomerular apparatus. At the glomerulus, the nephrons and the afferent and efferent arteriole are organised so that the ascending portion of the loop of Henle is located between the two arterioles, as shown in figure 11. The cells located in the wall of the loop of Henle is specialised and is called the macula densa. In the same area, around the afferent arterioles, we find juxtaglomerular cells, which are specialised smooth muscle cells. In addition, between the macula densa and the juxtaglomerular cells, there are a third group of cells called mesangial cells. Altogether, these specialized cells form the juxtaglomerular apparatus. Figure 11. The juxtaglomerular cells, which are the smooth muscle cells surrounding the afferent arterioles, are mechanoreceptors, which respond to changes in pressure due to stretching and detect changes in blood pressure in the arterioles. These cells contain the enzyme renin, which is secreted when blood pressure drops below a certain threshold. The macula densa cells are chemoreceptors that register the sodium levels in the filtrate arriving at the upper portion of the ascending loop of Henle. Low levels of sodium is an indicator of low blood pressure. Kidney physiology. The kidney's main functions are to regulate excretion of waste products, water and salt balance, the body's acid-base conditions. To ensure these processes, the kidneys regulate the composition of the blood plasma that enter the kidney. This is done using three mechanisms, figure 12. Glomerular filtration, tubular reabsorption, reuptake, tubular secretion. Glomerular filtration. Glomerular filtration is the term used for the filtration of blood in progress at any time in the glomerulus, figure 11, thus creating the filtrate in the nephrons, the three adaptations relating to the capillaries in the kidney that make filtration of large liquid volumes in the glomerulus possible are: the hydrostatic pressure in the renal capillaries is high, higher than in other capillaries. The capillaries in the glomerulus have a large surface area, branches and folds inside the glomerulus. The membrane of the capillaries are more perforated than other capillaries, making them more permeable. If required, vasoconstriction at the efferent arterioles can further increase the hydrostatic pressure gradient in the glomerulus between the capillaries and the hydrostatic pressure in the tubule. Because of a large surface area, the permeability of the capillaries, the relatively high blood pressure in the glomerulus, means they are capable of filtering large volume of blood. During a day, over 180 litres of filtrate is produced, while all other capillary beds in the body produce approximately 4.2 litres of fluid, which is drained by the lymphatic system. In addition to water and salts that are relatively small substances, larger molecules such as sugars, amino acids, nitrogen waste, urea, are also filtered into the nephrons, but larger molecules such as cells or proteins are not filtered. Glomerular filtration rate, GFR. Glomerular filtration rate, GFR, indicates the volume of filtrate produced in the kidney per minute, i.e. the volume of fluid that ends up in the nephrons per minute. Normally, this volume is 120 to 125 millilitres per minute. Maintaining adequate GFR is essential for the kidneys to be able to do its job. If the GFR decreases, the body will not be able to excrete excess fluids, salts and waste products, nor could it adjust the pH when required. On the other hand, if the GFR is abnormally high, there is the risk of excessive loss of salts and water. For these reasons, GFR is carefully regulated by two renal mechanisms, figure 13, internal mechanisms and external mechanisms. Before we continue with the explanation of the regulatory mechanisms of GFR, it is important to emphasise the following point. Since the hydrostatic pressure in the glomerulus is one of three factors, see above, that affect glomerular filtration, two of which stay relatively constant, the body's blood pressure is the major factor regulating GFR. In other words, the regulation of GFR and blood pressure are in many ways two sides of the same coin. This also means that any factor affecting the blood pressure, i.e. the autonomic nervous system, will also affect GFR. The internal mechanism of the regulation of GFR is called renal autoregulation. When GFR decreases, for example due to low systemic blood pressure, two inner mechanisms take effect. The myogenic mechanism, the stretch of the arterial smooth muscle cells due to high tension or blood pressure, means that the arterioles will subcontract to oppose increasing blood flow, which is potentially harmful to the kidney. In a situation of low blood pressure, the lack of tension in the smooth muscle cells in the afferent arterioles induced afferent arterioles to dilate. This increases the blood flow into the glomerulus and the hydrostatic blood pressure will rise as long as the efferent arterioles do not dilate. The tubulo-glomerular feedback mechanism. This is controlled by the macula densa. At low blood pressure, only relatively small amounts of filtrate pass into the nephrons due to low GFR. This means, as explained below, that there will be little sodium in the ascending part of the loop of Henle. This inhibits ATP release from the macula densa, which triggers vasodilation in the afferent arteriole of the glomerulus. Accordingly, the hydrostatic pressure increases slightly, and thus the GFR rises. The external mechanisms that regulate GFR are initiated by the nervous and endocrine systems. These mechanisms are the same mechanisms regulating systemic blood pressure. See the e-compendium on anatomy and physiology of the heart. By decreasing blood pressure, GFR decreases. The fellow mechanisms will therefore take effect. Baroreceptors in the body will respond to decreased systemic blood pressure and trigger the sympathetic nervous system that will 1. Increase the cardiac output by regulating the stroke volume and heart rate, and 2. Activate vasoconstriction of the arterioles of the body. These mechanisms together will increase the blood pressure. Sympathetic nerves will also directly stimulate the juxtaglomerular cells, with the consequence that they release renin. Renin increases the level of angiotensin II, the renin-angiotensin mechanism, which itself provides vasoconstriction and stimulates adrenal secretion of aldosterone. Aldosterone acts on the distal tubule cells and increases the absorption of sodium and thus water. Therefore, blood volume increases and blood pressure increases. Decreasing systemic blood pressure in the afferent arterioles also triggers the juxtaglomerular cells to release renin directly. Renin increases the levels of angiotensin II with the same consequences as already described above, renin-angiotensin mechanism. Tubular reabsorption. When glomerular filtration forms the filtrate, it is forced through the nephrons. On its way through the nephrons, 99% of the filtrate is reabsorbed to the surrounding capillaries. This reabsorption takes place in all nephron units, both in the proximal tubule, loop of Henle, and distal tubules, figure 14, but with different mechanisms. In the proximal tubules, which is the first branch of the nephrons after the glomerulus, approximately 65% of all sodium is immediately reabsorbed, figure 14. This takes place by active transport, and the cells in this region contains large numbers of mitochondria, because of large ATP requirements for this reabsorption process to take place. When sodium ions are reabsorbed, chlorine ions follow due to electrostatic attraction. This large ion reuptake means, as usual, that the water follows. In other words, approximately 65% of water in the filtrate is reabsorbed immediately in the proximal tubule area. In addition to water and salts, there are also sugars and amino acids in the filtrate. These are usually 100% reabsorbed in the proximal tubules. The same applies for bicarbonate. Uric acid and urea wastes are also reabsorbed here, but these are secreted back into the tubules further down the nephron. When the filtrate leaves the proximal tubule, it is led into the loop of Henle, the descending segment located in the renal medulla. The renal medulla contains salt and is organized so that the deeper into the medulla, the more salt there is, figure 14. This means that the osmotic pressure also increases the deeper into the medulla. The higher osmotic pressure draws water out of the tubule and into the renal medulla. As the renal medulla contains abundant salt, and this part of the loop of Henle is impermeable to salt, salt will not exit the descending part of the loop of Henle. As the salt concentration in the medulla is increasing downwards, water will be poured out all the way down the loop of Henle. The water which is withdrawn is reabsorbed into the blood supply through the vasa recta. The consequence of this water reabsorption is that the concentration of the filtrate in the bottom of the loop of Henle is very high, i.e. equal to that of the surrounding medulla. In the ascending loop of Henle, the conditions are somewhat reversed, figure 14. The wall of nephrons here are impermeable to water. At the same time, this part of the nephrons are permeable to salt, and both sodium and chloride are reabsorbed from the nephrons into the medulla by both passive and active transport. The consequence is that the concentration of the filtrate in the nephrons becomes lower, as only salt is reabsorbed. Thus, the overall effect of the loop of Henle is that we have reabsorption of both water in the descending loop and salts in the ascending loop, such that the filtrate arriving the distal tubule is more dilute than when first filtered in the glomerulus, and contains only 10% of the filtered sodium and chlorine and about 25% of water. 75% of the water reabsorbed at this stage, and the residual filtrate is more dilute than what arrived in the nephrons. In the distal tubules and collecting ducts, reabsorption is regulated by hormones according to the body's needs. The action of these hormones will be described next. Aldosterone increases sodium absorption. Aldosterone acts on the distal tubules, where it increases absorption of sodium, figure 14. Aldosterone is regulating the sodium balance of the body. Aldosterone increases the number of active sodium/potassium pumps, so that an increasing number of these work simultaneously, and it also ensures that the movement of sodium into the blood capillaries increases. This also means that aldosterone increases the excretion of potassium in the filtrate. Uptake of sodium occurs while potassium is secreted. Since sodium uptake increases, an additional effect of aldosterone is that water follows, and thus the reabsorption of water uptake also increases. Parathyroid hormone increases calcium absorption. Like sodium, most of the calcium filtered into the glomerulus is reabsorbed in the proximal tubules. However, in the distal tubules, This reuptake is further regulated by the parathyroid hormone, PTH. Atrial natriuretic peptide, AMP. Atrial natriuretic peptide, AMP, is released from the heart muscle during large strain as a result of high blood pressure or high fluid volume in the body. AMP inhibits sodium absorption in the renal collecting ducts and inhibits the effect of angiotensin II and aldosterone. The consequence is reduced sodium and water reuptake, resulting in fluid loss and eventual normalization of fluid levels and blood pressure. Antidiuretic hormone, ADH, increases water absorption. Antidiuretic hormone, or ADH, also called vasopressin, is secreted from the posterior pituitary gland and increases the water uptake in the renal collecting ducts, figure 14. It does so by increasing the permeability of the collecting ducts to water. Since the collecting ducts are situated in the renal medulla, where there is increasing salt concentration the deeper you go, the increased permeability leads to an increase in the reabsorption of water as the filtrate passes down the collecting ducts. In this way, the kidneys are able to produce more concentrated urine and at the same time increase body fluid. Tubular secretion. In addition to the reabsorption of various substances from the filtrate, the kidneys also secrete different substances from the blood into the nephrons. As described above, one of the functions of the hormone, aldosterone, is to increase the secretion of potassium. In addition, ammonium, nitrogen waste, various acids, and creatinine, nitrogen waste, and a variety of other biochemical products, and especially drugs, are also secreted into the tubules. Through tubular secretion, the kidneys control and regulate the renal elimination of waste, potassium, and control the blood pH. See section below. Dilute versus concentrated urine. The kidneys are able to control the concentration of urine according to the body's needs, thus creating dilute or concentrated urine. When you are sipping a bottle of water steadily throughout the day, you will have a recurrent need to urinate. And every time you do, you will see that your urine is clear and light in colour. At other times, if you do not drink over several hours, the colour of the urine is significantly darker and may have an odour. In the first case, you have dilute urine, a urine containing little salt and waste in relation to water quantity. In the latter case, the body needs to conserve water because you are continually losing water through the skin and breath. The kidneys are working to reabsorb most of the water in the filtrate. This produces a concentrated urine, a urine with many solutes with the least possible water. When referring to the terms dilute and concentrated in a physiological context, we are referring to the concentration relative to the concentration of blood plasma. The starting point to create dilute or concentrated urine is described above under tubular reabsorption. When the filtrate arrives at the distal tubules, most of the water and salts are already reabsorbed, and the filtrate is already more dilute, figure 15, than when first filtered. However, if circumstances require the kidneys to make a concentrated urine, that is, that the body is in a state where the fluid levels are relatively low and salt concentration is relatively high, the pituitary gland secretes antidiuretic hormone, ADH, which acts on the collecting ducts of the nephrons and increases the uptake of water. Increased water absorption means that the filtrate becomes more and more concentrated as long as it runs through the collecting ducts on the way to the medulla, figure 10. Accordingly, the kidneys produce a concentrated urine. ADH is secreted from the pituitary gland only when the salt concentration in the blood is high, exceeds the physiological concentration. In this way, ADH regulates the concentration of urine producing either dilute or concentrated urine depending on the water and salt balance in the body. Diuresis in diabetes. A common sign of unregulated diabetes is drinking a lot and urinating frequently. This is because a diabetic has high level of sugar in the blood. This is filtered in the glomerulus, but the level is so high that the proximal tubule is not able to reabsorb all the sugar. Thus, some sugar stays in the filtrate in the nephrons. As the filtrate moves through the tubules, water will be taken into the tubules from the surrounding tissues. This increases the urine output and the patient loses fluids and becomes thirsty. If excess sugar continues to be filtered into the kidney over a long period of time, the filtration membrane of the glomerulus can be damaged due to the large sugar molecules forcing through the filtration slits. This is part of the reason why kidney failure is a common complication of long-term uncontrolled diabetes. Ureter, bladder, and urethra. The urine that is produced in the nephrons and the collecting ducts is transported through the ureter into the bladder. The ureter contains smooth muscle cells that contract when they are expanded, i.e. when urine fills the tube. Thus, the peristaltic movements of the ureter push urine into the bladder. In addition, the ureter is innervated by the parasympathetic and sympathetic nerve cells, but their function is uncertain in that they appear to have little or no influence on peristalsis. The bladder is a muscular sac which stores urine, figure 16. The bladder has the capacity to store 800 to 1000 milliliters of urine. It is not usually that full of urine. From the bladder, urine passes through the urethra. The urethra in women is very short, just a few centimeters, while in men it is up to 20 centimeters. This is why women are more prone to urinary tract infections than men. Microorganisms are able to enter the shorter urethra more easily. The urethra has two sphincter muscles, the inner sphincter that is not voluntary but regulated by the autonomic nervous system, which opens the urethra when nerve impulses contract the sphincter. The outer sphincter is regulated by a voluntary mechanism. This allows you to override the internal sphincter and to decide when to urinate. Emptying the bladder. Emptying the bladder is controlled by reflexes. When the urine enters the bladder, it stretches the smooth muscle and creates a tension and stretches the muscle. This initiates a stretch reflux that inhibits the bladder to contract, stimulate the inner sphincter to keep closed, and stimulate contraction of the external sphincter. In other words, the filling of the bladder initiates a stop mechanism for emptying. After about 200 milliliters of urine is collected in the bladder, nerve signals are sent to the central nervous system, triggering the need to urinate. Contractions of the bladder will only then be initiated. When you are ready to urinate, the voluntary mechanism is initiated by the parasympathetic neurons from the pons, which stimulate contraction of the bladder, detrusor muscle, the opening of the internal sphincter and inhibit the external sphincter. The urine is excreted. Micturition takes place. If it is not convenient to urinate, the cerebral cortex blocks the reflex that initiates contractions in the bladder and urine continues to be collected in the bladder. After an additional 200 to 300 milliliters filling, the micturition reflex is initiated again. The cycle repeats until the urge to urinate is so strong that it can no longer be inhibited. Summary. The body has two kidneys that regulate the elimination of waste, water and salt, and has a number of other functions to maintain body homeostasis. The kidney's smallest structural and functional unit is the nephron, which together with the collecting ducts ensure the production of the filtrate, which is formed by pressure filtration in the glomerulus and processed by tubular reabsorption and secretion. In the proximal tubule, both salts and water are reabsorbed. In the loop of Henle, water is reabsorbed in the descending section, while salts are reabsorbed in the ascending section. When the filtrate arrives at the distal tubules, it is more dilute than the initial filtrate entering the glomerulus. If the body does not need to get rid of excess water, the filtrate arriving at the distal tubules undergoes no further processing. If the body needs to conserve water, aldosterone may increase absorption of sodium and water in the distal tubules, while ADH will increase water reuptake in the collecting ducts. The final urine leaves the kidney through the ureter and is stored in the bladder until it is finally excreted under voluntary control through the urethra. Introduction of acid-base regulation. Acids are by definition substances that can release one or more protons, hydrogen ions, whereas bases are substances that bind protons. The stronger the acid, the more hydrogen ions are released and the lower the pH. The pH is the concentration of unbound hydrogen ions. The stronger the base, the more hydrogen ions it can bind and the higher the pH. At low pH, there is an excess of hydrogen ions, and at high pH, there is an excess of hydroxide ions. Acids are able to react with other molecules. It is for this reason that low pH, for example, can inhibit or even destroy proteins, such as enzymes. So it is important that the body's pH must be carefully controlled. Learning outcomes. After studying the chapter on acid-base regulation, you should be able to describe what an acid and a base is and explain what is meant by pH. Describe the pH scale. Explain the physiological pH values. Explain what a buffer is and what are the main substances that act as buffers in the body. Explain how respiration is involved in the regulation of pH. Explain how the kidney is involved in the regulation of pH. Explain concepts of alkalosis and acidosis. pH. When we talk about acids and bases, we generally use the pH scale, figure 17. This is a scale that indicates how acidic or alkaline something is. The pH scale is a logarithmic scale and ranges from 0 to 14, with 0 being the most acidic and 14 the most alkaline. When the pH is 7, we say that the solution is neutral. Liquids with a pH between 0 and 7 are thus called acidic solutions, excess of hydrogen ions, and liquids with a pH above 7 is called an alkaline solution, an excess of hydroxide ions. A mixture of an acid and a base will neutralize each other, but the pH does not necessarily become neutral because it depends on the amount of acid and or base that finally determines the pH value. If the amount of hydrogen and hydroxide ions are equal, the solution becomes a neutral because these ions bind with each other to form water. In fact, water itself is very slightly acidic, but we will not cover this aspect. The pH scale is logarithmic. This means that between each unit of 1 on the scale, there is a factor of 10 in the difference in the concentration of hydrogen ions. That is, pH 5 is 10 times more acidic than pH 6, and pH 4 is 100 times more acidic than pH 6. Regulation of acid-base balance, i.e. the pH, is vital for the organism. Enzymes and biochemical processes work optimally at certain pH values and at worst can be destroyed by non-physiological acid-base level in the body fluids. The pH varies slightly between different fluid compartments of the body. In arterial blood, the pH is 7.4. In venous blood and in the interstitial fluid, the pH is 7.35, while the average intracellular pH is 7.0. In the respiration physiology unit, you learned that venous blood contains more carbon dioxide than arterial blood, and that there is a direct correlation between carbon dioxide and pH. The more carbon dioxide, the lower the pH. This explains the difference of pH in the arterial and venous blood. In the stomach, the pH is between 1.5 and 3. This is up to 100,000 times more acidic than blood. The body's pH regulatory mechanisms. To regulate pH of the body fluids, you are provided with three mechanisms that work together at all times to regulate pH. These are the chemical buffer systems, the respiratory regulation of carbon dioxide, the renal reabsorption, secretion and production of bicarbonate. The kidneys regulate pH levels. The kidneys' role in regulating the acid balance in the body is relatively complicated. We will not go into the chemical details here, but only briefly mention the role of the kidneys in regulating pH. There are three renal mechanisms to regulate pH: reabsorption of bicarbonate, which can bind the acid in the body fluids, production of more bicarbonate in additional to the bicarbonate reabsorbed, which again binds with acids in body fluids, secretion of bicarbonate when in need of more acid in the body fluids. Bicarbonate is the most important buffer in the body. In simple terms, we say that the more bicarbonate, the more acid can be bound by the following equation, as shown below. This removes the acid from the body. Similarly, if smaller amounts of bicarbonate are available, only smaller amounts of hydrogen ions can be bound, and therefore hydrogen ions accumulate and pH drops. The buffer systems. The pH in the blood must be closely controlled and kept stable, and for this to work, we have different buffer systems. A buffer is a substance that can bind both acid and bases so that the pH does not change much even if the amount of acid or base increases. The buffer resists pH changes. The three buffer systems we use are the bicarbonate buffer system, the phosphate buffer system, the protein buffer system. Protein buffer system. Let's look more closely at the protein buffer system to illustrate how this works. Proteins are composed of amino acids. Amino acids consist of an acid group and an amino group. These groups form bonds with neighbouring amino, but some amino acids in proteins have additional groups. If the body fluid is exposed to acids, for example, biochemical degradation of substances, hydrogen ions of such acids will be bound by the amino group of a protein by the following reaction, as shown below. R indicates the rest of the protein. The hydrogen ion is thus bound by the protein, and so by buffering the free hydrogen ion, by binding with it, the protein opposes a potential pH change caused by the hydrogen ion. If the body fluid is exposed to a high pH, i.e. bases which give up hydroxide ions, An acid group in a protein can release hydrogen ions according to the following reaction as shown below, where hydrogen ions will react with the hydroxide ions and form water. Again, we see that a potential change in pH is compensated by the buffer. Respiratory pH regulation. Respiration also has an important regulatory function of the body's pH. The respiratory function regulates the pH by regulating the carbon dioxide levels in the blood. Consider the following chemical equation. If carbon dioxide in the blood increases, hydrogen ions increase because the chemical reaction will tend towards the right in such a situation. This means that the pH decreases. An increase in hydrogen ions is detected by the respiratory center in the brain and breathing increases. An increase in ventilation results in carbon dioxide being expired and therefore the level in the blood decreases. By regulating respiration, the lungs participate in blood pH regulation by increasing or decreasing the respiration rate and the blowing out of carbon dioxide. Alkalosis and acidosis. Alkalosis is a term used when the pH in the body is higher than 7.45 and acidosis when the pH is lower than 7.35. Alkalosis and acidosis are thus non-physiological conditions in the body. There are two types of alkalosis and acidosis, metabolic and respiratory. Respiratory acidosis or alkalosis arise from changes in pH regulation due to a problem with the respiratory system. Acidosis and alkalosis, which is not classified as having a respiratory cause, is said to be a metabolic acidosis or alkalosis. Respiratory acidosis is the most common explanation of imbalances in the acid-base conditions in the body. These arise when a person breathes shallowly or when gas exchange in the lungs is impaired, such as in chronic bronchitis and various pathological other conditions. When this occurs, carbon dioxide builds up in the blood and consequently the pH decreases. A typical example where you get metabolic alkalosis is after severe vomiting. A lot of acid is lost in the vomit, an intake of alkaline substances where bicarbonate and other bases are ingested, raising the blood levels. Summary. During cell metabolism, a number of substances with acid properties, that is, with the ability to release hydrogen ions, are formed. In addition, both acidic and base substances are absorbed through the intestine. At the same time, all the cells and the biochemical processes are dependent on certain acid-base conditions in order to function optimally. The body's acid-base ratio must therefore be carefully regulated. The body has three partially overlapping mechanisms to prevent and correct the imbalance in the acid-base levels. These are chemical buffers, a respiratory compensation mechanism that can excrete carbon dioxide, and the kidney's ability to absorb, secrete, and produce bicarbonate. E-compendium summary. The body consists of a lot of water, which is divided into three liquid compartments: the plasma, the interstitial compartment, and the intracellular space. Body fluids contain a number of dissolved substances, including sugars, amino acids, fat, and not least a variety of salts, ions. Among these are sodium, potassium, calcium, and hydrogen ions, or protons. The latter determines the pH in the body. The different salts are unevenly distributed in the various fluid compartments, and this distribution is physiologically important to maintain normal cell function in the body's various tissues. Both water and salt levels and body content of hydrogen ions are therefore regulated very carefully. The kidneys play an active role in this regulation by excreting excess salt and water as needed. In addition, the kidneys excrete various wastes, including urea, which is formed during the degradation of proteins.